Well, I think we're very lucky to have Ted Schmidt right here, and I think we ought to jump in and introduce him. He's the author of Never Neutral, A Teaching Life, a wonderful book, and he has a blog called theologyinthevineyard.wordpress.com, and it has a great subtitle, Where Theology Meets Politics, Culture, Economics, and History. Well, welcome, Ted Schmidt. Good to see you.
Good to be back, Phil.
And the occasion of your visit is a book by a Catholic priest. This must be something close to your heart as an interest. His name is Claude Lacalle, and it's titled Rebel Priest in the Time of Tyrants, Mission to Haiti, Ecuador, and Chile. It's got a foreword by Miguel Descoto, and you've read all this. Can I ask you about Miguel Descoto? I thought his foreword, that was a heartfelt foreword.
It was a very powerful foreword, and he never knew Claude, but he was obviously taken by his perspective and his life. He really walked the walk in Latin America.
Descoto.
Descoto did, and that's why he wrote without knowing Claude Lacaille. He didn't know him.
When he saw it, he recognized a brother. And I should always mention, I guess Miguel Descoto his last big job was President of General Assembly of the United Nations?
That's right. And former General Secretary Foreign Secretary in Nicaragua.
What a heroic man. When Libya was being bombed, he volunteered to be their representative.
He was amazing.
And the UN wouldn't allow it.
No, they wouldn't. Let me bring a lot of this together. I mean, your show today is quite amazing. First of all, you had Bishop Osmer, the best of the Anglican Church, a man who came from a foreign country to go to Africa to be on behalf of the underside of history. You got Bob Lovelace, First Nations, who is living on the underside of history, going to Gaza to support the oppressed Palestinian people. You have David Heap, yes, the son of Dan Heap. Now, let me remind you about Dan Heap. A lot of people have forgotten Dan, but David doesn't fall too far from the oak tree there. Dan Heap, like Claude Lacaille, as a priest, spent 23 years working in a factory in Toronto so that he would understand not the clerical privilege life, but the life of working people. So you have an extraordinary link today. And I first met Dan in the late 60s when, as an Anglican priest, he was picketing the Anglican Church because of their failure to speak out against, again, the oppressed peoples of Vietnam. This all goes back to one of the great Christian martyrs, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who was martyred in April of 1945. And in his letters from prison, he wrote something that became a real trope for Christians post-45. He said, "I think we are learning to understand that theology must begin on the underside of history, to see life from the role of the oppressed people." And this is what this amazing priest, Claude Lacaille, has done. He is brought back into focus once again, I think, the legitimate life of serious Christians, which had been abandoned by the turning away from the Second Vatican Council. And this is why I was amazed at the honesty, I shouldn't have been, of Miguel Descoto, who both of them said, that the last two popes were committed to undoing the Second Vatican Council.
That is really, and by the way, I mean, I always have to say, I was so impressed with John the 23rd. I
mean, well, sure.
It was, here I was, let's put it this way, I'm not a Catholic.
And right.
I said, hey, I like that guy. My whole family did. Everybody said, finally, somebody who speaks up for ordinary people. He acts like an ordinary man.
Well, this is, I had lunch today with a brilliant young student that I've got to know who graduated from my high school, Neil McNeil. And he tells me, he just finished his first year in France studying, that even people who have no religion are turned on by the thrust of this pope.
The new pope.
Yes. Because he's saying things, look, if a Christian's not a revolutionary today, he's nowhere. And we have to fight against this imperialism of money. that is sidelining so many people. So, you know, here you have
the, have an echo there, God and mammon.
Yes.
Can't serve them both.
That's right. So here we have this amazing idea of a pope who's so far ahead of his cardinals that he may get shot as one of the enemy. God forbid that he does, but... this is one of the problems that Claude, this wonderful priest, when he came back to Quebec after suffering under Pinochet, he didn't recognize Quebec. Yeah. The church had totally been destroyed, you know, and he had to start all over again with basically a people who had thrown out the Catholic Church because it had become so oppressive.
An obstacle to them.
A total obstacle to all progressive movements. So the book is quite amazing. It was put out in French first, and he hopes to come to Toronto. I had a long conversation with him this morning.
Oh, that would be great.
And, yeah, and they hope to launch it in Toronto because it's almost like a blast from the past that is now back in favor.
Well, like a storm through the wall or something. Suddenly the door opens. You say, there's my old brother or cousin, and he seems okay, and he seems to be ready to – return to the path of the Vatican II.
Yeah, both of them, you know, when people ask me what happened to the church, I said, well, I think it's pure Newton, the second law of thermodynamics, action, reaction. So you had this movement, which the great Hurley, the Archbishop of Durban, South Africa, said, Vatican II was the greatest change in thinking in the history of the Catholic Church. You took a church that was fairly reactionary, full of charity, but not justice. Mm-hmm. You know, no social analysis. And then you have this explosion, which excited people like me, who grew up in a pre-Vatican church. And then, so we have this explosion, and this priest friend of mine in Manchester, England, said, we only had 13 years of Vatican II. Before John Paul II came on the throne, and he came from a church that was frozen in time, the Polish church. Yeah. They never had Vatican II. And so then the forces of reaction began to take over, and it was so dispiriting for so many people. And, you know, we're paying the price.
And by the way, it was an active struggle. This book shows he is involved in several fights, and they're not just on behalf of the people who are trying to get bread or housing or to fight off soldiers who are trying to kill them, but also within the church. I mean, what those two popes, which he identifies as being opposed to Vatican II, the fight was there too. I mean, you couldn't count on the solidarity of the church leadership when you got into a jackpot.
No, this is one of the shocking things that most Catholics up here and Christians don't understand, and this is why I brought these books in. This is from my own library, but these were the heroes of people that I read about. Mm-hmm. One or two of them were bishops. Here we have, you know, Cosel Daliga, almost murdered in the Mato Grosso area of Brazil. Here we have Sobrino, who would have been murdered with the rest of them when they were killed in 1980. He was just out of town. El Salvador, speaking up for the people of Salvador.
The nuns, I remember the nuns.
That's right. Then we have the father of liberation theology, who's now back in favor, Gustavo Gutierrez. And then we have Adolfo Perez Esquivel, the Christ in a Poncho, who fought the dictatorship in Argentina. And then we have Juan Luis
Segundo. By the way, the Poncho comes up a lot in the writing of
I'm going to mention that. Yeah.
Lecal.
So Segundo from Uruguay, a great priest, and then Pablo Richard from Chile. So you had all of these people, brilliant men, who were inserted into the society on the side of the poor. They ran into, as they do everywhere, the great forces of capital, and many of them paid for their life.
Yes.
And so then Claude and I were talking today about Monsignor Romero, who was canonized immediately when he was murdered by the people.
By the people,
now,
yes.
Now it's taken Rome.
Not by Rome, no.
No, 25 years later, you know, which gives birth to the old famous Catholic saying, the Catholic Church always arrives a little bit late and a little bit out of breath. You know, You know, they're way behind up there. But you have this Pope who said, no, this man was a martyr. This man was a martyr.
Francis said that.
Francis said that about Romero. And so, you know, it's paved the way. But, you know, Claude points out when he came back, he was burned out. You know, I mean, he saw so much suffering.
I'm surprised he survived.
He survived.
When I read that book, by the way, the prose is so clear and so honest.
It's very simple.
Very direct.
Very direct. And when he came back, he really needed a couple of years. Hmm. You know, he was so burned out. To see friends murdered, you know, to go to funerals all the time, to run from house to house. And by the way, he became a worker priest. Yeah. Remember that? He works in a hotel.
Yes.
And he told me there were about 80 other priests that were doing that. Yeah. And this was one of the biggest disasters that the Catholic Church had when Pius XII put an end to the worker priests.
Yeah.
And because they got to know, you know, the people's struggle rather than, you know, everybody saying, yes, Father, no, Father, etc. Yeah. So one of Claude's great heroes is this Bishop Proano, the son of a shoemaker in Ecuador, who always wore a poncho and said, call me by my first name. Well, when's the last time you had a bishop up here say, call me? I called them because I refused to get into this clerical nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, what's your first name?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a father, a real father. Yeah. You're not. You know, so we got to get away.
This is Ted Schmidt, by the way.
We got to get away.
Never neutral.
From putting these people on pedestals, particularly if you're proclaiming the death of a man who lived under occupation, Jesus of Nazareth, a Palestinian
Jew. Killed
by
soldiers.
Killed by soldiers, killed by the Roman Empire, who, you know, he stretches out his arms on the cross. This is basically an act of solidarity with all of the poor of the world. Now, I never understood why people didn't get that. You know, that there was a solidarity.
Well,
with
it's iconography, isn't it a bit? I mean, it's just, you know, let's make it into a stone. Let's make it into a statue.
Yeah, and forget about it.
And forget about it.
Well, like that's what Martin Luther King said, never put me on a stamp, you know, then I just become yesterday's person, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of people said that. So Claude came back. He didn't recognize the church. The church is totally, the institution is dead. They're selling huge churches in Quebec, eh? Hmm. So this is an interesting thing for us as Canadians, Phil. What did he get involved in? Students. He told me when he went to universities and CGEPs, he met the Catholic students. There'd be one or two of them. And it was moribund because the church had lost its power. So he started building this up. And let's look at this. This ended up with 150,000 kids in the street, remember?
Yes. Absolutely. There is nothing like it in North America
except in Quebec. Now, people should ask the question, how come these kids are on the street against the neoliberal economics of escalating tuitions where they're paying $50,000 at Notre Dame and Princeton and Harvard, ridiculous, in the biggest country in the world and in Europe, in the progressive, it's free.
Yeah.
And it's manageable here, but it's going higher. I paid $800, you know. So he gets involved with these kids. And then starting in the late 80s, he starts to build up these young Catholic Christian students. But they're just a small group. They join the other progressive students, and there's 150,000. Now, we should ask ourselves, how come this happened in Quebec and nowhere else? And here's the answer. We were talking about this. I said, Claude, here's the analysis I have. What do you think about this? Is that in Quebec, they saw that the church was too oppressive. They got rid of it. But the people had internalized the deep values that the Catholic Church had and still has and keeps me being a Catholic. Mm-hmm. Solidarity with the poor, the common good as a central value. And you're not going to do this to us. And they got out on the streets.
Yeah.
And he said the kid that led this revolt against the escalating petitions was the son of a man that Claude taught 20 years ago. So that's why I...
Well, that's going to be investigated. That's a tip.
Yeah, that's a tip.
The police find out about this.
So, I mean, that's why I loved the teaching, the young people that I knew, that we encouraged them. You know,
and by the way, just to toss in, those students invited the student leaders of Chile.
That's right.
Came to Montreal.
It was incredible.
And the other place in South America, they had comparable demonstrations was Chile.
Yeah,
quite Montreal and yeah. Santiago. This Claude was up to something. We have to look into this guy.
Well, he is up to something, and that's what he said. He had a very funny line today talking to him. He said, Ted, he said, I had to have a divorce from the institution. He said, here I was in a parish in Trois-Rivières. He says, saying Mass for 100 people. He said, this is ridiculous. These people aren't engaged in any social struggle. So I said, well, one of the best creative thinkers I know on Christianity is Jim Wallis, who lives in Washington, D.C. And this is what he said, and I tell this to everybody. Look, you've got to ask yourself this question in every parish. Is this meeting in your parish, whatever parish it is it not? Is it linked to a social struggle outside? Mm-hmm. If it's not, you're wasting your time. Uh-huh. And when we take a look at Francis, he's coming out with this revolutionary for a pope thing on the environment and encyclical that we have to take seriously as Catholics. Yeah. But I look at 50 years that I've been active after the Vatican Council, I didn't know any parish that was involved in the social struggle. You'd think the biggest issue in the world today, we're burning the world down with climate injustice. You would think that parishes would have small groups linked to Suzuki or Friends of the Earth.
Yes.
Nothing going on. People going to church, not making any links at all to the world that we're living in. And that's why my students would say to me, I have a party every year for former students for 28 years, and they say to me, look, when we left Neil McNeil School, that religion department made some sense to us because you said we got to be engaged. We were out on the street, as you know, protesting against arms race, protesting against the war.
Engage was a good word.
We were engagé, as they say in French. And he said, but then now these young people I know are in their 50s. And they said, this made sense to us. And then we started having children. We got into parishes. Nothing was going on. You know, priests were leaving and they were bringing in foreign-born priests, and I'm all for it. But they were people that were full of misogyny. They knew nothing about our social teaching, but they just kept the institution going. So you had an institution that was just there. It wasn't really engaged. Yeah. Very sad. And there's some really good priests but they're all retiring. I went to a friend's, they actually worked them till they're 75. Because they don't have anybody coming in. They got to bring them in from Poland, got to bring them in from India, and let's face it, they're not sending us their best.
Yeah.
You know, what country is going to send their best young clerics?
They're not arriving with passion.
No. So this guy, Claude, he has had an extraordinary priestly life, but he's had to have a divorce from the parish to get involved with other people, you know, who really had a pulse, who really were engaged in the social struggle.
Yeah.
You know, for years I've been marching, and I've never seen, outside of a few Jesuits and Redemptorists and Franciscans and some of the nuns, I've never seen any of the hierarchy. You know,
I think he mentioned that. He said it was a small group of Jesuits took him in, and that's linked him eventually to the students.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's our hope. You know, the religious orders were the ones who were a bit on the edge.
Yeah.
You know, and
well, by the way, they've got to be mentioned. Mary Knoll.
Mary Knoll.
I take my hat off. Not that I wear one, but every time I think of him.
Mary Knoll. All of these books that I have here are Mary Knoll books. In 1984, the man who started it, Philip Sharper, I knew Phil, and his son is Stephen Sharper, who writes in the Star a lot, a great theologian here. He got a call. He was almost on his deathbed from Ratzinger, said, what you're doing is not simpatico with the gospel. What he was doing, he was bringing the
Ratzinger himself called?
He called Mary Knoll. And
I
mean, it's shocking that these men, you know, great theologians, but
they've got to be one of the most respected Catholic institutions.
Oh, absolutely.
They've been known around the world.
They've been sending nuns and priests to live with the poor all over. I mean, it was a great missionary order. And we've had the Scarborough Foreign Missions here, too. I just sent Claude The Lives Lived. I wrote about Harvey Steele, who got run out of the Dominican Republic by Trujillo with a gun to his head. What was he doing? He was teaching the people the cooperative movement, you know, from East Coast.
That sounds like a police matter.
Well, I mean,
by the way, I'm going to tell our listeners, this is Ted Schmidt, And he is the author himself of Never Neutral, A Teaching Life, and he also has a blog, theologyinthevineyard.wordpress.com, where theology meets politics, culture, economics, and history. And we're, of course, talking about the new book by Claude Lequel, Rebel Priest in the Time of Tyrants, Mission to Haiti, Ecuador, and Chile. It's got a foreword by Miguel Descoto, who, among the other reasons I admire him, is that one night I was watching him being interviewed on television not long ago, and he had a picture on, I always look at what's behind these people, and he had a nice picture of Ramsey Clark.
Yes, he was a
sitting
big
fan. I want to ask you this. What about this term? I like this term. See, judge, and act. He repeats that through the book.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's what I grew up with. And this was a movement of a Belgian priest called Cardinal Cardine. He was Belgian, and just before the Vatican opened up. And he had started Young Christian Workers Movement. And it was a little seed group here that came to Toronto. And their whole thing was look at this, analyze the situation, judge it, and then do the third thing, act on it. Uh-huh. Don't let it be just an abstraction. You know, yeah. It's not enough to abstract.
You know, Jean-Paul Sartre said something like that, right? He had the thing of it's first you have to comprehend.
Yes.
You have to understand. Then you have to act.
Yeah. So Claude is of that generation as I am. Cardinal Cardine, forgotten today, but he was incarnated here.
I suspect he's going to make a comeback.
Well, he'd been long dead, but in Toronto they had a group called Youth Corps that was an extraordinary effort in youth ministry, and that was their model, get engaged. And after 20 years, they got rid of the priest, a great priest named Tom McKillop, who had turned young people, among them Joe Mahavik was a member.
Well.
Bob Cardy of the CBC.
Uh-huh.
These were incredible young people who were out on the street.
It's always important to remember people's roots, that Mahavik was trained or interacted with a wonderful mind and a leader.
That's right. So the See, Judge, and Act, you're right. It's all through the book, but that's where it comes from, is Cardinal Cardine. And he had a great impact. He had a great impact on Vatican II, where we started to define ourselves as the people of God. Mm-hmm. And the central sacrament isn't holy orders.
Mm-hmm.
It's baptism. You were called by your baptism into the life and the death of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only way you're going to be resurrected,
mm-hmm.
until you die, until you get in there and they start spitting on you and you start making a wave, and it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, if it happened to Jesus, yeah, figure it out.
Well, I can tell you, I recall meeting a great pacifist leader. I think his name was McReynolds. Phil might remember him.
Dave McReynolds.
And
yes,
he was speaking in Sacramento. And I said, I'm thinking about joining this group or that or doing something. And he looked at me and he said, well, you know, according to Jesus, if you would save your life, you must lose it.
Well, that's exactly right. And these guys, like Claude.
And I thought to myself, let me think about this.
Do I want to really want to get into this?
Yeah.
You know? But he opened a few doors for me that I wasn't aware of. Like, sometimes he praises Cardinal Silva, who started.
Now, isn't that interesting?
Yes,
he gets very angry with De Silva.
Silva.
But then he ends up saying, but he did come through.
Yes.
It's sort of like a 60, 70% grade.
Yeah. Like, Silva was the guy who was a lawyer, very smart guy, who started to document the abuses in Chile so the rest of the world would know it. Enrique Silva, you know, a great Latin America was
so
full
many,
of
so
giants.
Yes.
We had Cardinal Arns. We had Landazuri. We had the Lorscheiders in Peru. We had incredible men. I only learned about them through Orbis books, you know, because they were far off. Thanks to the Marinoler. But he told a very funny story. When Silva came back from when Paul VI died,
oh my goodness,
and Silva gets off the plane, and they had named this wonderful Pope, John Paul
I. The 48-hour Pope.
He lasted, 30 days, and he laughed, and he said, well, we saved ourselves from a Polish Pope.
Yeah.
And 30 days later, we had him, who was a really good man. Yeah, JP2, but he was a reactionary. You know, he tried to push the clerical state over the lay people, and he hurt he hurt the universal church by naming yes men as bishops around the world. The greatest pontificate of the 19th century was Leo XIII. He had 27 years on the throne of Peter, and they said, how come you had such a good pontificate? He said, I was never afraid to make a bishop of somebody who disagreed with me, not John Paul II. Yeah. You had to swear for the birth control encyclical that you would never mention female priests. Yeah. Now, a lot of people took the king's shilling and did that, and they were useless as bishops.
Yes.
They never engaged the people, and that's the struggle that this pope has.
Yeah.
He doesn't have these troops, cardinals. He doesn't have the generals behind him, but he's got the people on the ground that really want Christianity to mean something.
Ask, this is Ted Schmidt, of course, the author of Never Neutral, A Teaching Life. What is the status of former Pope Ratzinger? Isn't this kind of a curious phenomenon? Could you help us understand what is his status?
I think this is his greatest gift, that he proved that a pope could retire. He was a poor administrator. He was never really a good bishop. He was a man of the academy, a very smart man. And the rot within the curia destroyed him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he wanted to be above the fray.
Boy,
but when he saw
the terrible things went down, he saw the
corruption, you know, and he didn't do too much about the sex abuse stuff. He knew all this. He tried to protect the church. It was really sad. And I give them credit. You know, it wore him down. Mm-hmm. So that's good that a pope can retire, because when we look at John Paul II, it was awful the way they were trotting him out on the stage, drooling, and it was very sad.
It got to be pathetic.
Because he was a good man, and he didn't deserve to be humiliated, but he wanted to hang on.
Yeah.
You know, and the beautiful thing is you don't know who's going to succeed you.
By the way, does it meet all the standards? I mean, is it the only time or first time this has happened?
I think it happened once before.
Well, you suppose they might be – that might be a degree of modernization, is to say, look, if a guy is starting to lose competence, then that's –
Well, they're asking bishops, you have to submit your retirement at 75. Hmm. And they pick it up very fast if you're a progressive bishop. But, you know, if you're a reactionary, they let you hang on for a few more years. But, you know, those guys in America in the 70s and 80s, we had some dynamos, because Paul VI said to his the man in America, he said, I want you to go out and look for pastoral people, not what one guy calls them, the set decorator priests, the guys who like to dress up. You know, find the guys that get onto picket lines that are supporting the poor, or like Hunthausen was speaking out against the nuclear weapons in Puget Sound. You know, find me those men, like Cardinal Bernardine.
Yes.
You know, Bernardine was in Chicago, and it's really interesting. The Pope came to America, and he said to Bernardine, who was the head of the bishops, why don't you support your president, Reagan? He said, why I don't support him and we don't? He's killing people in Latin America.
Mm-hmm.
But John Paul loved him because they had this anti-communism mantra.
By the way, isn't that at the core? For example, when he went to Chile, he said, and he worked with the poor, he met all kinds of communists, by the way, not one kind, but two or three kinds.
Oh, yeah, and Marxists.
And his position was, if they're working for what I'm working for, I work with them.
Absolutely. But that's right out of the gospel.
And that doesn't come from the U.S. State Department. That, as you say, it comes from the gospel, which apparently is not related to the U.S. State Department.
No. I mean, it's right out of the gospel. Matthew 7:21, you know, it's the whole story of being, if you're not against me, you're with me. And not everybody who says Abba, Father, gets into the kingdom, but he or she who does the will. What's the will of the Father? Mm-hmm. It's the reign of God. It's peace and justice. That's what God wants.
Yeah, and he doesn't believe in Fifth Amendment, in persecution of people who have espoused views which are not approved by the state.
Yeah.
That's not...
This.
You know, how they got sidelined into that, that's such an ugly story.
Yeah.
Because John the 23rd, obviously, I mean, that's what we all picked up from him. He was not hostile to the phenomenon, for example, the Cuban Revolution. Look where we are now with Raul Castro saying,
I might be a Jesuit.
I'm sure glad to meet you, and I'm thinking about rejoining the church.
No, that was wonderful.
And he didn't ask to be a cardinal or anything like that, but it is, I mean, no, it's just, in other words, they can have a healthy relationship.
Sure.
He knows that Francis is not going to put political demands on him.
No.
He's going to talk to him about what they, common problems or things to be expected, but he's not going to operate on a U.S. diktat. Before we finish here, I want to make sure that letter he wrote to the Pope was a wonderful letter.
I asked him about that. He wrote an open letter that was published in Le Devoir in 1987, and he told me that he got 350 emails. It was printed around the world. It was a real challenge to Ratzinger, saying, how dare you criticize liberation theology? You haven't even landed in our country. You don't know the work that we're doing. And please stop it. You know, I'm speaking to you as priest to priest.
Yes.
And it was, he didn't think it was a brave thing to do. Le Devoir printed it. It was reprinted in Italian. It was reprinted
but
in Spanish.
But not in the Toronto Star. Wouldn't you have loved to have seen that in the Toronto Star?
Well, no, they had to end up with guys like me writing, supporting Romero in 1990.
Yeah.
And we printed that. But, you know, this guy was a priest, and so he was supposed to be part of the club. And here he is criticizing the Pope. He said, well, why would I be worried about that? I was speaking as a priest that knew more about what was going on here than he did.
I thought it was a study in how to make firmly differ with a brother. At the end of it, he says, obviously, I don't disrespect you.
No,
obviously,
he doesn't.
I appreciate you in your role.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, you're wrong.
You're wrong.
And I want you to change.
Well, he told me he was astounded at the response because it was global.
Wow.
And printed in German, Spanish, and Italian, and Russia.
He was far from being the only one thinking the way he was.
No, but he didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a really tough age. You know, a lot of people went mute on us.
Yes.
You know, there were some of us out there trying to do this, and you know, there were other people trying to shut us down, and we couldn't get a hearing, we couldn't get in to see people, and you know, as I write in my book, I got attacked regularly, and you know, I didn't take it too seriously.
You're like the rebel priest Claude Lacalle. You understand that being attacked is sometimes a form of a compliment. I mean, it means you're doing, right? A little pain has been produced and some cries.
That's right.
And you say, oh, good.
No, you don't say, oh, good. You know, but it comes with the territory.
Yes.
You know, this is a lovely book. And, you know, it's nice that it's written by a Canadian, albeit a Quebecois.
Yes.
You know, and I hope it gets a little bit of legs here when he comes to Toronto.
So your hope, intention is we'll bring him here on some occasion.
They have plans. Robin Philpott and Baraka Books, who bravely did the book, want to bring him.
I think there are people all over would love to hear from him. I think many Catholics, of course, would like to hear him.
Yeah.
The book, by the way, is Claude Lacalle, A Rebel Priest in the Time of Tyrants.
Baraka Books.
Baraka Books. And it is brand new and has a foreword by Miguel Descoto. Now, we've been talking to Ted Schmidt, who is the author of a great book, Never Neutral, A Teaching Life. And he also has a blog, theologyinthevineyard.wordpress.com, where theology meets politics, culture, economics, and history. Ted, you know, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And thank you very much for reminding us that Dan Heap was a worker priest.
He was a worker priest.
I can remember when you used to see a lot of worker priests, and they were wonderful people.
Yeah.
And we ought to have that expression come back to life. and maybe we will, actually, with this book by Claude Lacalle, okay. And, of course, with Francis in the chair.
He's back. It's in vogue now, and he's 75. Actually, it was his birthday today, Claude. So I wished him bon fête.
This is Claude Lacalle's birthday?
76 today.
Well, boy, are we proud to be talking to him, just as we're proud to be talking to Ted Schmidt. you're listening to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. That's my daughter trying to find out what I'm up to. And so Lucas and Henny, thank you. And we'll see you next week.